From college to the pros, America's pastime in full force, 24/7 on the Long Ball with Andrew Brown.
That's right, everybody. Welcome one, welcome all. You are listening to the Long Ball with Andrew Brown. I am Andrew Brown, and happy to be here yet again for episode 18. Hope you've enjoyed it just as much as I have the past 17 episodes or so. Check out on the show's official Twitter page at the Long Ball One, as well as my Twitter page at abrown_13878. For those of you not familiar with this show, it is primarily a show revolving around the likes of collegiate and professional baseball. Although I will dip outside the baseball world from time to time to talk about other interesting storylines. Also, for those who do not know, I am a big fan of really sport the best way possible, which is to dive into the best minds of the game. In this case, in baseball's case, the best sports writers, the coaches, players, everybody in between, even the technical side of things. I love to dive into all the things that make this sport great and all the people who really dive into the sport and live this sport. So I hope you enjoy it, ladies and gentlemen. It's going to be another baseball edition for this episode. Once again, a big shout out to our sponsors, Bob's Ultimate Lighting, TreePans.com, and also Insulites and Insulites.com. Insulites for ranchers. It's protection you can see for those who really love their cattle. Obviously, profitability, you got to check it out. Got to protect everything where you don't have to shock yourself. So, again, Insulites, check them out online, and they're coming to the Iowa State Fair, so check that out as well. Hope you enjoyed last week's show, everybody. I know that that may have seemed like a more of a baseball enthusiast-specific episode, but I was trying to get across that it was more than that. Again, I had Wayne McDonald Jr. of Forbes Sports Money, Forbes.com. Here's the thing, ladies and gentlemen. We always remember where we were and what we were doing when a big moment in history happens. From the moon landing to JFK assassination and more, whether it be good or bad, we remember where we were. And that same atmosphere, that same feeling is what I put into baseball. You know, I'm always fascinated by the stars of tomorrow. I'm always fascinated to follow the journey of somebody through the minor leagues and then become the star they are today. That's that same feeling. I remember where I was, what I was doing when I got to talk with or where I followed this certain player up. A big example is Brandon McKay. He pitches for the Tampa Bay Rays now. He's a multi-way player, bats and pitches. He's going to revolutionize the game for sure. He was a Louisville Cardinal. He played baseball for the University of Louisville. I got to chat with him once. I got to chat with Coach once. And, you know, that stuck to me. I remember exactly the day when he got drafted where I was. I remember the day when he got called up to the major leagues. So it's kind of that enthusiastic high for me. So I always remember that. And that's kind of what I was trying to get out with this past episode, because the Miami Marlins have a lot of young stars that will be the stars of tomorrow. They'll be the next Mike Trout. They'll be the next Justin Verlander. And a lot of them will be with the Miami Marlins. So it's very exciting to see that progress and see how that goes. And so please check out the great works of the interviewed guy that interviewed Wayne McDonald Jr. Works for Forbes Sports Money. Check him out. He has dropped an officially new updated draft summary for the Miami Marlins. Now that everything is done, everybody is signed, he has an updated draft summary. Check that out again at Forbes Sports Money, Forbes.com. All right, ladies and gentlemen, let's get into it, shall we? Let's dive right into things. Let's get to the nitty-gritty here. This show is going to be great. We're going to give you another edition of This Week in Baseball's Past, and then I get to sit down and talk about the technology behind the game of baseball. More specifically, I'm talking about the 2019 All-Star Game. There is some technology used in that game that has never been before seen. There's technology used in there that's been around not too long, and technology that has big implications for the future of Major League Baseball. I'm going to be talking about all that, plus give more awareness to autism and the autism campaign with the great, the one and only Maury Brown of Forbes Sports Money, Forbes.com, a great baseball mind. I know you'll enjoy the heck out of this episode just like I have. So without further ado, ladies and gentlemen, let's dive into it and let's get into the past with This Week in Baseball's Past.
From the ground balls to grand slams, from strikeouts to perfect games, it's time to take a look back in time on This Week in Baseball's Past.
On July 23, 1962, playing greats Jackie Robinson, Bob Feller, and Ed Rausch, along with managing legend Bill McKinney, were inducted into the Major League Baseball Hall of Fame. Robinson, who wore the famous Brooklyn Dodgers jersey number 42, and origin of Jackie Robinson Day, became the first black player in the 20th century for Major League Baseball. That happened when Branch Rickey promoted him from the minor leagues in 1947. Robinson was also the first African-American elected into the Hall of Fame in Cooperstown. As for Bob Feller, he currently stands as the one and only individual to throw an opening day no-hitter, and he won 266 games despite missing nearly a full four seasons. Leading the league in batting titles on his way to a complete lifetime .323 batting average, Rausch won two National League batting titles. Also, managing legend McKinney won four National League pennants and captured two world championships with the 1952 Pittsburgh Pirates and the 1940 Cincinnati Reds. And that, ladies and gentlemen, has been This Week in Baseball's Past. And there you have it, folks, another edition diving into all that is baseball history on This Week in Baseball's Past. All right, ladies and gentlemen, let's go ahead and let's dive into the meaty part of the show now. The main event is we're going to be talking about the technology side used in the 2019 MLB All-Star Game and the implications moving forward. We're going to be doing that and bringing light autism back to the table again with the one and the only Maury Brown of Forbes Sports Money, Forbes.com. Maury, gotta say thank you so very much for joining the show. Love what you write, love what you put out. It's always head turning, always inspiring, and really appreciate you joining the show today.
Well, thanks for having me.
Now, Maury, the first thing that I want to dive into right away is the article that you put out right before the 2019 MLB All-Star Game, and you had me right from the get-go, right from the title. 3D Statcast to Skycams, 75 mics around the field, MLB All-Star Game will be unlike any before. And it sure was. From the 3D graphics to the Statcast and, you know, the different camera types that were there, man, there was a lot going on. Now, you went into a lot of depth. You went deep into it. And again, everybody, if you want to check this out, I have it on my Twitter page. The story is on my Twitter page at abrown_13878. Go ahead, check it out. It is still relevant no matter what time you read it, whether it was before the All-Star Game or now, well after. There is still a lot because of the implications that can happen with it. Now, again, Maury, you went deep into detail with this, as the MLB did. What was it like writing this kind of article, and how fun was it to dive deep into the minutiae of the technology used in this game?
Well, I think the biggest thing is that, and this really straddles not just baseball, but sports in general, is that all of the networks have some form of technology on them. I mean, they really have, like, whole departments, you know, around it. And we've seen this grow considerably over time. I mean, the biggest thing, obviously, that I think people now take for granted was when Fox introduced the Skycam to the XFL, and now that is standard fare in pretty much all football, and now we're seeing it in baseball for jewel events like the All-Star Game, where it doesn't traverse the field and would become something that would basically block play, but they can move it around and basically look at the crowd, look at the field, and move the camera over the field of play and around the venue. But then, once again, some of the technology that's been used in other sports, namely, I'll say auto sports, we see the camera basically embedded in the asphalt, and the cars are, of course, coming at them at high rate of speed. Now we're seeing this in baseball around the base paths, Fox introduced one that actually swivels. So they've had ones that have been static, basically in front of the plate, where you're able to see the batter and the catcher in place. But now they're able to move that around, as we're starting to see that if we have some plays at second or third, especially. So it just continues to be this technology that moves forward. And then when you add StatCast in, and how Fox took it a step further by doing this 3D imaging of the StatCast data, it just continues to move that ball forward. And I think that you're going to continue to see that, whether it's in auto racing or the NBA or the NFL. The networks, of course, have a serious investment in all the sports properties, and they want to be able to keep you entertained. And each and every year, they're going to try and give you something different to whet your appetite and make you stick around to watch the content.
Once again, everybody, the one, the only, Maury Brown of Forbes Sports Money, Baseball Writers Association member, and just all-around great guy. He joins the show right now as we talk about the technological side of baseball. Now, Maury, within the StatCast realm, within all the different graphics, within all the technology that was put on display within that 2019 All-Star Game, when it comes to the conversation of keeping the enthusiasm within the fans, keeping that up, I know there's been a lot of talk about baseball losing people, losing that enthusiasm. Do you think with what we saw at the All-Star Game, with all the different graphics, with all the different technology thrown at us, in the conversation of keeping fans and keeping their enthusiasm, do you think we'll have to start seeing, or do you think baseball will have to be implementing more of that on a regular game basis?
Yeah, I mean, you might, but I think that is, it's not just baseball, right? I mean, really, we have what they call fragmentation now, which is, if I have, 1,000, cable or satellite channels, I have my, Netflix and Hulu available to me. Right now, everybody has a million options to basically grab their eyeballs and pull them around. And the idea, of course, is to try and retain those viewers, try and make it interesting, and so it affects everybody. But look, I think that the thing will be that I think that for, once again, the All-Star Game is what they call a jewel event. It's an event-driven thing. The Super Bowl is an event-driven thing. When they have series play, you're going to see more of the technology in play, largely because the networks can go ahead and camp out for a few days at a time. But I think you will continue to see that work its way in. As to regular season games, I think it'll slow, it'll be there. I'm not going to see, Skycam for every game. No, I just don't see the ability of being able to, set that stuff up on short notice and do that and really get their money's worth out of it. But I do think that for the postseason, you're going to continue to see this move along. And once again, it is that. I think that the biggest thing is that we are constantly wanting to see the game in different ways. This would be different than, say, visualizing or using, logo umps or whatever in baseball. This is a different thing that I think most people want. I think that they want to see the game in different ways. And we're going to have a deep conversation about whether, those doing play-by-play are maybe injecting too much information and distracting from it. But visually, I think that it's a good thing to have different views of the game and have it be as colorful as possible that way.
Once again, everybody, my guest, the one and only Maury Brown, Forbes Sports Money, Forbes.com, and also BBWAA member and a whole lot more, including just a great baseball mind. He joins me now as we continue to talk about the technology side of the game of baseball. Now, in today's world here, Maury, we get to hear more of the conversations or more of the arguments of whether or not we have a robot umpire versus a real-life person. Now, I'm all for having the call right, but then again, I'm kind of paradoxical in that I'm a baseball fan, and no matter what type of baseball fan you are, there's always going to be a traditional aspect of not messing with the game too much. And I know something's got to happen. I don't know if the robot umpire thing is the way, but when you hear about the new technologies being introduced, as we saw at the All-Star Game in particular, do you feel like going forward, whether it be StatCast or just the equipment that is out there now, that is available now, do you feel like all that would help, hinder, or do nothing for the conversation of the robot umpire?
No, I don't. I mean, look, hey, I think that maybe the thing that is moving forward outside of just what happened with the All-Star Game in Fox is, of course, the K-Zone that's been added to a lot of broadcasts. I know that there are those that find it to be a major distraction. I think that it's probably here to stay. But it does start to get into a large conversation where we're starting to visually see those of us at home that are watching the game and look to see how balls and strikes are being called more visually that way, it does start to bring into conversation around that. And look, it's not just, you know, how we're watching it on television. I mean, we basically had GameCast on MLB.com for quite a while now. So it does start to have a deeper conversation around the quality of umpiring. And when you have all these visual representations of it, it makes it very clear to the viewers. Now, look, I think it's very difficult a lot of times in fairness to the umpires how the camera is oriented in center field when it's not directly behind the pitcher. It becomes a little bit harder to really gauge that stuff. But, like, it makes it obvious when there are balls that are, you know, 4 or 5 inches outside of the strike zone that really shouldn't be called a strike. And that really starts to make that conversation happen a lot more often. I do think that it's just a matter of time before that comes into play. I think that it just – we continue to see some valid reasons about why the quality of umpiring is important. I think that there are ways to try and keep the human element in play. I just think that this is just one way to really try and firm things up and keep it a little more, you know, where it should be. Let's get the calls right. And the human element, I think, will continue to be part of it, though, as the umpires would remain behind the plate and everywhere else on the field.
Once again, everybody, Maury Brown of Forbes Sports Money, Forbes.com, Baseball Writers Association member, and of course, just an all-around baseball guru. He joins me now. Check him out on Twitter at Maury Brown, M-A-U-R-Y, Brown, on Twitter. Of course, you can catch out his great work from NBC Sports to many other places. He's been a writer for Baseball Prospectus. And so he knows the ins and outs. And, of course, right now we're talking about the technological side of the game. And, again, everybody, if you get the chance, if you are able to record it, go back. I mean, not just for the game itself, but go back and all that they put in there, all the technological, all the special equipment that they put in this thing, from cameras in the dirt to cameras on players to cameras on helmets. You know, this is stuff that can really revolutionize the game and really take things a little bit further. About my second episode in, I talked with an individual named Chris Weichel, formerly of the College Baseball Scouting Network. Now it is a different entity in itself, but nonetheless still does the same great thing. That was neuroscience that we talked about and neurobatting and how that could be applied to batters, and that would be in some of that technology that they used in the All-Star game, that'd be it. But nonetheless, we're chatting about that with Maury Brown right now. And Maury, my big question for you now, when you look at it, I mean, this is like leaps and bounds almost above what last year's was. And you talked about a new flavor to the table every year, and certainly they've done that. Now, my question is, you know, I know it has to be getting ever more increasingly difficult to find more ways to wow and find more ways to spellbound us. You know, I love the fact that in the All-Star game we get to talk with the players on the field, but I wonder how long that will go before the casual fan starts going, I've seen that, heard that before. Now, in terms of the technology side with StatCast and everything, have we hit our limit with that? Because it seems like it is just unbounded. Like, this is far and beyond what we've ever seen. And I don't know how you top that. Can baseball top that? Do we have room in baseball to expand upon the StatCast era? Or do you feel that we're kind of set in terms of our technological advancements?
Well, I think that, look, there are terabytes of information that are collected with each one of these games. And one of the things that when I was working with baseball, when StatCast was first introduced, and working with MLB Advanced Media, I was like, guys, I just, like, how in the world are you going to make this contextually interesting? I think that it's great, right, that we can see how all these balls line out of the ballpark and we use it largely with launch angle, and that has become a conversation around the increase of slugging percentage. But I think the thing that where it's really going to come into play is out in the field defensively, and certainly with stolen bases. I think you're going to see more and more around that. You know, the accuracy of how you know, someone is tracking to the ball, whether at the percentage on whether they should or should not have been able to make a catch, and then really the efficiency of those routes. Those things become more and more important as we start to talk about the defensive metrics. I mean, really, defense has been the last frontier for baseball. I don't know where you would go beyond that. I really can't. And so, I mean, you know, that I think is where we will continue to see the analytics of baseball focus. I mean, certainly we've seen what we see in terms of how batters pull, how they basically spray the field, and then where we're looking at things with the shift. And so, you know, that has even gotten microly managed. And that's something else. It's not just shifting people to one side of the field or the other. It's really where on the field their positions in the middle of those shifts, depending upon where a batter is at. And so I don't know. I can make an argument that this is good, and I can make an argument that it is bad for baseball. What it's great for baseball in the sense that information makes is it's no other industry in the world basically walks away from having less information at their disposal. We use it in all kinds of ways, and we're always trying to get more of it in every other business. Baseball, in a lot of ways, pushed back on that for the longest time. Now it has become so prevalent that all the teams are so equally matched that I think that it becomes difficult in a lot of ways to make it exciting. There's really not a lot of mystery behind anything, right? I mean, we used to have the September call-ups that I think had a great influence on the game. But even now, we have so much video that you're looking at your iPad in the dugout. You get scouting reports right on the fly. You can watch video of players. I think that the technology has changed the game in a lot of ways. Whether it has gotten boring in terms of the fact that we're largely looking at a lot of home runs, less station-to-station baseball, is really subjective. I personally would like to see more station-to-station baseball, but like, the game is what it is, and we'll go ahead and see whether it is good or bad. I mean, attendance being down, I don't think is 100% influenced by that. I think a lot of that has to do with it simply not being competitive.
Well, and I agree with you 100% there, Maury, because ultimately, I mean, you see this era, which was kind of started by the Houston Astros, in which teams do a complete and utter rebuild. Miami is in the middle of that. They're trying to follow the Houston Astros model because, obviously, the Astros have had quite the turnaround from a 50-win season to now a perennial 90-win team. But in terms of the Statcast and the numbers here, I know that, again, every team has an analytical department, and you try and you talk about really spicing things up, you know, making sure how we put all this data into usable form. A lot of people out there may get a little overwhelmed by the amount of numbers out there, even if they are dulled down to the point where they are very usable and notable. But from your standpoint, what factors bring out the stats that we should all look for? What numbers or what should we be looking for? What's the biggest mover of the dial in terms of what people should look after?
Well, I think that the biggest thing is, of course, you know, and this is any business, what you start to get into is you know, your efficiency and your effectivity of how you draft, how you sign players, whether that's free agent players or giving players extensions. I know, like, this is a huge topic of debate right now in baseball, where we've seen this flip where free agency space has largely been devoid. I mean, the total money is probably, it's not the highest that it's ever been. The total expenditure in free agency was the second highest ever this year. That was largely centered around, you know, certainly Harper, Machado, you know, just a handful of players got really big deals. And rank and file has not seen some of the growth that they have. And that's due to the analytics of the game. They're starting to look at how, you know, where you're starting to get your money's worth. Are we really doing well by signing players to long-term contracts at the end of their careers, rather than putting the money up front? Now, I think that argument has two sides to that coin. I can make a pretty strong case that if you're in a particular window, if you're in the good side of the bell curve, in the 75 to 80 win range, that going out and spending money on a veteran free agent, even though you might have to overpay for that player, gives dividends when you are trying to win and go to the postseason and win the World Series. That's what every team should try and do. The other piece, though, is largely that you're starting to see more emphasis around younger players, which kind of makes sense, right? You're going to pitch a risk up front. If you've scouted really well, if you have a lot of information at your disposal, you're going to have maybe less risk around that player than you would, say, a veteran at the tail end of it. So that's kind of the battleground right now that's going on. The biggest change right now, as we're seeing it right now, is how analytics is changing the face of how we're investing or how clubs are investing in their player payroll. And I think this is going to be a huge battleground for this upcoming labor deal. I mean, we're going to see it. The owners say that they have a limited amount of money that they're willing to pay for player compensation. If you want to stick that money up front, they're saying, well, then you're going to lose it on the back end. And I think the players want to see it both ways. They want to see veterans compensated very well. They think that if you're going to have players that are, you know, impactful, look at Vladimir Guerrero. Some of the players, Alonso, that we saw in the home run derby, shouldn't be held back for service clock manipulation. I mean, there's this huge debate raging right now. So I think that's the biggest change that we're seeing. It's not the numbers themselves. It's that the owners and the GMs are starting to look at it a little bit differently than they had before. They've been slow to adopt that stuff. And I think that in some ways, I think that caught the players off guard.
Maury Brown of Forbes Sports Money, Forbes.com, and of course a BBWAA member and former baseball prospectus writer. You can catch his work all across where pretty much every sports entity is. He's been at NBC Sports, obviously Forbes.com, and more. So check him out. He's also on Twitter at Maury Brown, at MauryBrown. Now, Maury, I know we got to get you out the door here, so let me go ahead and dive into questions about you here. I know from what I've seen in your messages that you put out on social media and so forth that you are a big member, or you're a big supporter of autism awareness. And not just from the standpoint of noticing it's there, but noticing or being aware of the underlying issues, being aware of things on a deeper level. I know that autism is something that affects a lot of people, affects a lot of Americans, thousands of Americans, in fact, and thousands of people across the world. So what have you been up to lately within the autism field? What are you working on? And what's just the biggest underlying factor that people should be recognizing? Because, again, as you have talked about, it's more than just recognizing it's there. It's recognizing the deeper stuff when it comes to autism.
Well, first off, thanks on this. I mean, I have a son with autism. He's 13 now. One of the biggest things I think is that if, let's say, you go to, you know, your local Target or whatever your big box store is, and you see a kid having a meltdown, a lot of times it's sensory driven. And I think, of course, us from a distance, we have this thing. It's like, you know, if you just discipline your kid, or that kid's just, you know, a wild child, and this is what happens when we have free-range kids. But I think a lot of times, it really is one of those situations where it really could be sensory overload for a lot of these kids, and it makes it difficult. And the biggest thing now is really trying to just kind of take them for where they're at. I mean, one of the biggest things for me has been the exceptional value of small victories, and this is speaking mostly to the parents or the caregivers that are involved in this. You know, I'm not going to mention his name, but a former major league pitcher that is now involved in the minor leagues and the coaching capacity let me know that his kid was diagnosed with autism and some other stuff. And I just remember when that happened that it was just this very difficult time. Your entire idea of what your kid is going to turn out to be really changes. And what happens over time is, of course, small things become very large victories. I mean, you know, simple things like potty training your kid can take an exceptionally long time. Being able to go out in public and not fear for them running away, and all these other things that go along with it. I think the biggest thing, though, from the awareness perspective is that they know. I think that the kids that you see that you think maybe are not aware of what is being said to them, they know what's going on. They may not be able to verbalize it or express it in ways that we might have a conversation. But I would say that for those that are around kids with autism, don't talk to them like they're not there and not aware of what's going on. Just be aware that they're there. Be compassionate. You know, I think that's the biggest rule of thumb with any of this, and any kids that have any kind of learning disability at all. Just try and be as compassionate as you can, and like I said, try not to judge from a distance what's going on.
Once again, everybody, Maury Brown of Forbes Sports Money, Forbes.com. He's joining me. Check him out on Twitter at M-A-U-R-Y-B-R-O-W-N. Also, you can check out his works pretty much anywhere you find sports, whether it be NBC Sports, whether it be Forbes Sports Money and more. Check out. He's got great work, and, of course, you'll love every bit of it. We're wrapping up our time here with Maury Brown. And, Maury, one more question about you. You talked about your time at Advanced Media for MLB and all that. I mean, you're a great analytical mind. I can tell even with just a few tweets that you put out there, you are very well versed in analytics, and not just analytics, but how it can be used beneficially, how we can put those numbers into usable formats, and that's what's helped usher in the analytical era we have today, and I think baseball thanks you so very much for it. I want to talk about a business that you have. It's called Bizball LLC. Kind of take me through that. I'm guessing that it has something to do with the analytical side of things. You've got a lot of things going. Bizball LLC is one of them. Take us through what Bizball is, what it does, and what we can expect out of it.
Yeah, I mean, I've been doing private analytics for a host of different clubs and leagues over the time. I've worked for player agencies and clubs around the business side of things. And so I continue to do that work on occasion, you know, and it's one of those things that have just, I find it, you know, super interesting. I really got my start not as a writer, but really kind of working within the industry, trying to bring Major League Baseball to Poland and helping do, you know, market studies around that, how that looked. And that was in the early 2000s. Of course, now Portland's trying once again to see that happen. And you get a good idea when you get involved in that, some of the challenges that go along with it. So there's been that. I've certainly worked on some veteran players that are heading into salary arbitration and done workups for that on the analytics side. And I've helped some sports leagues do market analysis to see whether they would be good for expansion. So, you know, it's always interesting to do that. You know, it's really promising and challenging work. And so that continues to be something that I really enjoy.
Well, there you have it, folks. The one and only Maury Brown. Catch him out on Twitter at M-A-U-R-Y-B-R-O-W-N. Check out his great work all across where you can find sports, particularly at Forbes Sports Money, Forbes.com. Check it out. I know you won't be, you will not be disappointed. I mean, he has some great work there. Great out-of-the-box thinking. It's not the minutia of the game, and you'll find it very interesting, just as I do each and every time. Maury, thank you so very much for taking the time to join the show. I got to tell you, man, it was a great conversation, and I really appreciate it.
Well, I really appreciate it. You know, it was a great conversation. And once again, thanks for the comments and the questions around the on the autism thing. It's obviously something that's very close to my heart.
Well, hey, man, anytime I get to help out, especially a go-getter like you who really does a lot for autism awareness, I really help and appreciate that. Again, I also appreciate the chance you coming on talking baseball technology with me here. Again, everybody, Maury Brown of Forbes Sports Money, Forbes.com. Check out all of his great work. I know you won't be disappointed. With that, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to bid you adieu. I'm going to end this one right here, right now, and I'm going to go ahead and hit the family scene again. So until next time, and again, with next time, we'll most likely be catching up with Wayne McDonald Jr. again, talking about the trade deadline. We'll also try to get some other guests on there for you as we continue on with another edition next week. Once again, please like and share on Twitter and Facebook. Please, please, please. That'd mean a lot. I know I get a lot of listens on the sites themselves. I can read the analytics, and I like what I see there, but I really would like it if you could share it and spread the word on Facebook and Twitter as well. Please do that. That'd go a long way for me and helping me out. Also, again, check out all the guests. I have all their Twitter handles when I talk about the show, pre and post. So go ahead, give that a listen, give that a like, and I'd really appreciate that. With that, ladies and gentlemen, I am officially signing off here, and hope you have a good one. And until next week, as they say in the showbiz world, stay safe.